Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the first ever Pantaloons podcast. Would you please give us a hey, and give us a ho, and give us a this doesn't work on the radio. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this inaugural Pantaloons podcast with me, Mark Hayward, and sitting to my left...
me, Steve Purcell.
Dr. Steve Purcell, preeminent Shakespearean scholar.
Why, thank you.
And co-artistic director of the Pantaloons with me. We're here today to talk about the Pantaloons' first ever production, As You Like It, and our current touring production, As You Like It. You may notice some similarities in the title of the play. It is, in fact, the same play, but two very different productions, as we're going to hear today. We thought it would be a good place to start for our first ever podcast, talking about our first ever production. So, Steve, why As You Like It for the first ever Pantaloons production?
Well, I was doing an MA at the time, and I was, in fact, I just finished the MA and I was moving into the beginning of my PhD. The MA had been on Shakespeare as popular comedy, looking at particular trends that I'd identified, especially in modern Shakespeare performance, the tendency to think about it as a piece of popular culture and to wrestle with that common tendency, that's still very common, to view Shakespeare as difficult, high culture, inaccessible, and to really reclaim his plays for a popular audience and a popular theatre style. And my PhD continued that concern and broadened it slightly. So I was no longer just looking at comedy, I was looking at popular theatre more broadly. And one of the things that had come out of my work for the MA was that I really wanted it to be informed by actual practical experiments. I was spending all my time reading about what other people were doing, and felt I could do something myself and would learn from doing it myself. So at the beginning of the summer in 2004, I put together a crack team of undergraduate actors, including yourself, of course.
Did you say crack team?
Crack team,
right,
yes.
Crack team, just checking.
No, definitely a crack team of undergraduate actors. Nine of us, I think there were, weren't there?
Nine? Pantaloons' biggest ever cast.
And then we rehearsed over the summer. The idea behind the production was that this would be an open-air production. I wanted to see what happened when you took Shakespeare into the open air in a relatively uncontrolled environment, which could be full of distractions and unpredictable weather and all that kind of thing. I wanted to explore commedia dell'arte, which is a form of Italian improvised masked comedy. From round about the same period that Shakespeare was writing, and you can see the influence of commedia dell'arte on certain Shakespeare plays, one of which perhaps is As You Like It. As You Like It contains Shakespeare's one and only reference, I think, to the word pantaloon, which is where, of course, our company name comes from. This is famously in the Seven Ages of Man speech. Jaques refers to the lean and slippered pantaloon, talking about a man in old age. And that comes from the commedia dell'arte character Pantalone, who's the old man character in commedia dell'arte. So in fact, we were originally called the Lean and Slippered Pantaloons as a company. We dropped the lean and slippered when it became evident that people couldn't really remember what the company was called. And it was a lot easier to say welcome to the Pantaloons production than welcome to the Lean and Slippered Pantaloons production. We explored an all-male cast because I was very interested in the stuff that the Globe had been doing under Mark Rylance back then with all-male casts. And I'd read a lot about an all-male As You Like It by Cheek by Jowl, which I hadn't seen. But I was really interested in what the effects of an all-male cast on this play about gender performance might be, especially seeing as Rosalind, in her disguise as Ganymede, describes how she's going to play Rosalind. And that's already, you know, a kind of Russian doll of gender performance. But if you add in a male actor playing Rosalind, then you've got a man playing a woman, playing a man playing a woman, explaining how he's playing a woman and what he's going to do, how he's going to pull off this performance. So I thought this would create all kinds of interesting aspects. And I also just wanted to explore clowning and audience interaction and all that stuff that people who are familiar with the Pantaloons work will know very well as part of the company's current identity.
Part of the reason you said was to make discoveries in the areas you were interested in exploring. So what discoveries did we make that summer?
Well, I think we made a heck of a lot of discoveries, actually. And I was looking back over some of the notes we took at the time earlier on today. some of the discoveries seem really obvious now, don't they?
It's really weird looking back over the feedback we gave after Steve took a questionnaire and all the actors answered on various aspects of what does being outdoors add to the production, what do the ad libs add to performing Shakespeare, what does live music add to it all, and all these things are now things that they are part of the fabric of what the Pantaloons do. It seems really strange there'd ever be a time when we were sort of, you know, questioning that it might add anything at all.
But I think equally we discovered some stuff that we didn't want to explore again. We didn't really explore masks ever again. I should just explain. Commedia dell'arte, most of the characters are masked, but the lovers aren't. So in our production, Rosalind, Orlando, Celia, Oliver, Silvius and Phoebe were unmasked characters, although they did have white face to kind of give that impression of a mask. All of the other characters were masked. And I should also add, we cut Touchstone and Audrey, which seems like a really weird thing for us to do in retrospect, because they're such an integral part of our current production and of its clowning. It seems really counterintuitive to have cut that out.
It seems bizarre. It seems a bizarre choice, I'd say.
Well, I wrote about it in the programme notes for the 2004 production, and what I said there was that because we were playing so many of the characters in a clowning style, I felt we didn't need the actual clown. And also I was concerned, as I always am, with running time. Shakespeare writes long plays, and so you have to really cut them down for open-air performance. And it seemed to me at the time that one of the easiest ways to cut down As You Like It would be simply take out a whole subplot, root and branch, and it leaves the main plot relatively untouched. I would and have taken a completely different approach to the play now.
What's interesting is it watching it again, it occurs to me that Shakespeare ended up enjoying his subplots way more than the main plot, and actually he took the angle of actually just cutting out the main plot. By the time you get to the end of the play, there's a couple of speeches. Oliver comes in and makes a speech about how he's reconciled all of a sudden with his brother, and then someone, a messenger essentially, comes in and says, oh, everything's fine with the rest of the plot as well, and it just gets curtailed and summed up in a couple of speeches, and was his angle, was to cut the main plot and keep the subplot.
Absolutely was. I mean, we'll get to this later, I'm sure, but one of the things we did this year for this production was go right back to Shakespeare's source material, Thomas Lodge's Rosalind. He gets most of his characters from Thomas Lodge, a prose fiction from a few years before Shakespeare's play. And obviously he gets Rosalind and the main love plot. He gets Silvius and Phoebe from there. He gets the two dukes. But he adds Jaques and he adds Touchstone and all the characters that Touchstone interacts with. So Touchstone's Audrey subplot is a complete invention by Shakespeare. And we found in our production this year that we were going the same way as Shakespeare, that because improvisation is a big part of what we do as a company, that these Touchstone and Audrey bits were just ballooning and squeezing out space for us to do the main plot that Shakespeare wrote. Weirdly, similar to what Shakespeare did, you know, ballooning this invention of his and squeezing out space for Thomas Lodge and for the various resolutions of his story, which actually make a lot more sense in Thomas Lodge. You know, all that stuff with Oliver suddenly getting a change of heart and Celia and Oliver suddenly falling in love. Thomas Lodge makes a lot more sense of that by just spending more time with it, time on it.
We should get back to, we've jumped ahead to 2018. We'll get back to We were talking about masks and the fact that we haven't, the one thing that maybe we used in the 2004 production, the first production of As You Like It, was masks that we didn't use again.
I think one of the things that came out, and again, this was something that some of the cast members fed back on, was that a mask freezes a character in a particular posture. Quite literally, actually, because you develop a particular physical posture for a masked character, or at least you do the way we did it. But also, of course, it means that they are distilled, that character is distilled. Now, I think some of the cast found that very helpful, where you've got a cameo character who really doesn't develop, having an excuse to play cartoonish, to play a particular characteristic, really helps the storytelling, really helps the play. It's perhaps what Shakespeare wrote himself. You know, he not all of his characters are fully developed. Some of them really are just there to offer a perspective on something for one scene. But I know the actor playing Jaques, who is wearing a mask, he felt quite restricted by his mask by the end of the run, because he wanted to do more with the character. And I think one of the things we've discovered is that you can get all the advantages of playing masked without a mask. You can play as if masked. You can play in a very full-bodied, physical, and yes, cartoonish way. But not playing masked then gives you the opportunity to undercut that, to subvert it. And in fact, some of the moments that I'm proudest of in subsequent Pantaloons productions have been those moments when we really pull the rug from under the audience's feet. They've been expecting something really kind of silly and joyous, and it's been that way. And then all of a sudden we just get a moment of subtlety, a moment of pathos, a moment of tragedy even. And I think that that's probably the artistic reason why we haven't really returned to masked work.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other thing we haven't repeated, really, is we've repeated it in one or two much smaller-scale productions, is the all-male cast.
Mm.
That's the only time I've done Shakespeare with an all-male cast was...
Yes.
Was As You Like It.
Is it something that you'd be interested in exploring again, or...?
I think I learnt most of the stuff that I wanted to learn from doing it in As You Like It, to be honest. I think certain ironies did come out from using the all-male cast. And again, the all-male cast gave us a kind of a... I want to use the word excuse, but excuse isn't quite the right word. An excuse to play larger than life, both female and male characters. But actually, I think we found other ways, even on As You Like It, that first As You Like It in 2004, to establish a kind of baseline company style that's a little bit heightened, a little bit augmented. So one of the things we did, which we definitely kept for subsequent productions, was colour-coded costumes.
Yeah.
And slightly cartoonish costumes. And many of our productions since then have featured each actor in a particular colour in all of their roles. One of the things we didn't repeat, of course, was they had, in As You Like It, coloured T-shirts and white overalls.
Yes.
And again, terrible, terrible idea for open-air performance. Do not put people in white overalls for open-air performance. They get muddy on the first show and yes, you never it's get
the
them clean.
It's mostly their knees. What other things we kept, do you think, that were informed? We've added stuff to the house style over the years, but some of those things were definitely formed from that production of As You Like It in 2004.
Improvisation was a big part of the show. We had actors interacting in character with the audience on the way in, and in fact we mostly have dropped the character, but we still have both indoor and outdoor shows. We have actors interacting with the audience on the way in, so that actors and audience in our shows feel like part of the same gang. There's no us and them, there's no division, and that remains an absolutely integral part, I think, of what we do.
For me, it's great as when you're a performer and you're doing that, because it's been the best way of dissipating nerves. I'm never nervous before a Pantaloon show because you're out there, you're meeting people. I think it works both ways. I think it's setting both sides, helping both sides relax into the performance. When you get to know people before the show starts, and you realise people are just people, and you're all on the same side.
Yeah. And that followed through the show. We had lots of audience interaction in the show, which has remained a big part of what we do. We had lots of improvisation. We had a kind of irreverent attitude towards Shakespeare whilst I think it was... And again, this remains. You know, all of our classic texts that we work with them because we love them and we think they are of immense value, and we want to communicate that love and enjoyment and passion we have for those texts. But at the same time, we're not afraid to look at them sideways, to have a little bit of fun at their expense, to perhaps take some of the high culture pretension that's accrued around them away through mockery, through pastiche, through parody. And that was right there in As You Like It. And I think the other thing that was a real discovery, and this is looking back over those questionnaires that we were talking about, I think the big discovery for most of us was the very first performance of As You Like It in 2004 was on a rainy night in the Greyfriars Franciscan Gardens in Canterbury. And we got as far as the second half of the play. And then the heavens opened and actors and audience alike just piled into the chapel, which is not a big chapel. beautiful, picturesque building. It's a medieval building. It's on the river in Canterbury.
It's literally straddling. The building actually straddles the river.
Because it was our first show. We didn't have a huge audience, so we fitted everyone in to the chapel whilst we waited for the rain to subside, and the rain did not subside. The rain continued.
It wasn't drizzle, was it? It was a heavy, heavy downpour.
So we decided what we would do is summarise the rest of the play, ad-libbing, and do some edited highlights. So we did all the songs that we still had to go. We did some key speeches and I think maybe a scene or two. Dialogue-based scene, maybe. I can't even remember if we did a scene, actually.
I don't know if we did the full scenes, I think.
Yeah, maybe just songs and speeches.
Yes.
And the actors playing Rosalind and Jaques, James Groom and Sam Pei, both of whom are still professional actors.
Yep.
Brilliantly improvised a précis of the plot, and it was amazing how much everyone loved it. The audience loved it. The cast came away feeling really good, despite the fact I think we were all a bit gutted to have had our first performance rained off
first
halfway
ever
through.
Pantaloons production rained off.
Exactly. But we'd created this thing that was improvised, that was all about togetherness, all about collaboration, all about something that was unique. And I think that the specialness of that night, I think, not only informed the rest of the run in terms of people looking for opportunities to create those unique moments of contact with the audience that will never happen again, but also informed our development as a company.
Yeah, well, it's accelerated 2018 then, and the current production we have on the road. Again, it's there's still a sort of academic route to it, isn't there? There's still an academic purpose to what we do. That hasn't been lost.
2011, I got a job at the University of Warwick, where I've been ever since, and that's pretty much when we count from having become a fully fledged, you know, equity signed up professional theatre company. And I mean, the reason that you know, this arrangement works so well for me is because I'm continuing to learn stuff. I think of the Pantaloons as my practice as research. I go into every production, usually Shakespeare for me, but not always, with a set of questions that I'm interested in investigating. And the process of directing is not only about putting the show on its feet and getting it on the road, but furthering my own understanding of how this kind of theatre works. And this year, for the first time, I got some money from the University of Warwick to workshop the play with a group of students and the cast for the first week of rehearsals, which was absolutely invaluable. And in some ways, it's kind of returning us to our origins, you know.
This group of students in rehearsals for As You Like It.
Exactly, after they, you know, they've broken up for the summer. Because this was the first week of July, we workshopped the play. And very different set of questions, very different set of students. But in some ways, you know, still doing something similar. Half the number of cast. So we've got four in the current production. 50-50 gender split, two men, two women. More characters than last time, because we've retained the Touchstone subplot. And my approach to editing has been completely different this year. It's been, I filleted everything in the play rather than taking out anything wholesale. So I think I've got better at editing. I'm still not as good as Mark. Mark's the expert. Brutally.
I'm not an expert. I'm just brutal. Yeah. Unrelenting. Nothing is sacred.
And also we had to cut a lot because we've also added stuff. So one of the things that I got the students to explore during this residency at Warwick was alternative texts. This is partly a necessity because with a cast of four, you need certain moments. You need a bit of padding in order to cover a costume change. But obviously padding serves no storytelling function. So what I really wanted to do is to make sure those moments were earned. You know, they're not just there, they're actually doing something that helps the storytelling. And because Shakespeare, as we mentioned earlier on in this podcast, is so fast and loose with some of the elements of his plot, we felt actually it was perfectly acceptable and actually maybe quite helpful to return to his sources and to look at some other texts to help us tell these stories. So some of the things that we found we wanted to expand upon. Why does the Duke hold this wrestling match? Shakespeare's source makes it really clear that he's really anxious because his people don't think he has any political authority because he's a usurper. And so he puts on this wrestling match as a means of distracting them. It's a kind of bread and circuses exercise. And so we found a speech that tells that story from Thomas Lodge. Similarly, we found a little bit of dialogue from Thomas Lodge that helps to tell the story of Oliver and Celia falling in love, which happens off stage in Shakespeare, but needed to happen on stage in us because they're covering a costume change for the other two actors. But again, I think it helps tell the story. This no longer comes out of nowhere, and we found that it kind of parallels the Rosalind Orlando plot. There's just a little moment where Celia tests Oliver.
So you're saying that in places Shakespeare's writing is a bit weak, Steve?
I wouldn't dare. There are certainly
places, his own structure.
There are certainly places where storytelling is not Shakespeare's primary concern. And I think you can defend Shakespeare's decision to keep certain plot aspects off stage for all kinds of thematic reasons. But actually, we're interested in telling a very clear story that's accessible, that children will understand, that people who are unfamiliar with the play will understand, and I think it helps. So I won't go so far as to say we've improved on Shakespeare, but I would say that we've created a show that works better for our specific audience.
Do you think maybe having four actors and the need, therefore, for when there's so many characters and so few actors, sometimes you need to really emphasise that story, the storytelling, really nail the storytelling so it doesn't get confusing?
Absolutely.
As part of that as well.
Absolutely, yeah, because there's so much multi-rolling that otherwise it does get confusing. And our actors are brilliant at multi-rolling, but even so, I mean, one of the things we struggled with in As You Like It was how do we make it clear that when Alex Rivers, who's playing Rosalind, appears as Rosalind playing Ganymede, that she's not a completely different character. So we've added in a moment where she gets changed and another moment where she asks the audience to help her play Ganymede. And similarly, Angela Eaton, who plays Celia, appears in her guise as Aliena. So we added in a little moment where they journey into the forest together. Again, it's covering a costume change, but it is also helping to tell our story in a really clear way. And then the students found some brilliant stuff as well. The students broke
into... Because they're probably going to be the only people that will actually be listening to this podcast. Let's give a shout out to the Warwick students.
Yes, hello everyone. You're all brilliant. And I hope you've all seen the production by now. So one particular gang, there were four groups. So the group of 25 students was divided themselves into four groups, one assigned to each actor. And the group that were assigned to Alex, who's playing Rosalind, but also Audrey, called themselves Justice for Audrey. They felt that Shakespeare had criminally underdeveloped Audrey.
This sounds really student-y, I have to say.
It really was, but they were absolutely right.
Did they have placards?
Do you know what? I'm not sure they did, but give them time.
Maybe T-shirts made.
Yeah. And they're absolutely right. Audrey gets very few lines in Shakespeare, and she's the butt of the jokes. And the students were just, they were partly cross about this, but also I think they wanted to understand the story better. What does Touchstone want from his relationship with Audrey? Shakespeare's play just doesn't really make that clear.
Is that a cultural thing, though? Would it have made more sense, think, to Elizabethan audience?
Yeah, because the plot of the court jester going to the country and seducing a country wench and then abandoning her was a kind of stock storyline. One of the things we explored on the residency was a book called Tarleton's Jests, which tells the story of Elizabeth's favourite jester, Richard Tarleton, who was also an actor, and in some ways could be seen as a kind of basis for some of Shakespeare's jester characters. And there's a whole section, a whole third of that book is about his escapades in the country, and many of them involve either him fooling a country wench, usually over sex, or a country wench, interestingly, fooling him. That doesn't happen so much in As You Like It at all. So these are stock characters in some ways, but we decided we wanted to tell a new story, or at least a different story. So the students found a variety of texts about someone from the city, someone cynical, perhaps a courtier, meeting a country wench. Many of them from Restoration comedies, it has to be said, from a century or so after Shakespeare. And one of those worked so well when Kieran playing Touchstone and Alex playing Audrey tried it out that we thought, well, let's use that for one of those moments when otherwise we'd have just had Touchstone alone on stage talking about Audrey. So we actually see them eating. And then we've improvised a new version of the scene where Touchstone bullies and belittles Audrey's country suitor, William. And we've actually had we found a way of making Audrey a lot more active in that scene and making it much more a two-hander rather than just Touchstone.
She has a lot more agency in it.
One of the students found a poem that I already knew about but hadn't thought of including, Christopher Marlowe's poem, A Passionate Shepherd to His Love, which of course is pretty much the story of Silvius and Phoebe, isn't it? A Passionate Shepherd to His Love. And so we used that to tell the early story of Silvius and Phoebe because we wanted an early scene between them to establish her character because she doesn't appear until the second half in Shakespeare. And then we discovered that Walter Raleigh wrote a reply from the shepherdess's perspective in which she spurns his romantic overtures. And we just found, well, this is brilliant. This is a dramatic scene which tells the story we need to tell. And so we've mashed up those two poems using bits of each, again at the students' suggestion, and that's in the show. Well, I suppose another thing that I should talk about in relation to the residency is the themes that we discussed over the course of the week, which have ended up being front and centre in our production. So it was a 5-day residency. First day, we thought about the three worlds of the play. And what I mean by that is the world of the corrupt court, Duke Frederick's court, the world of the exiled court, Duke Senior's court in the forest, and the world of the shepherds. The idea behind those three worlds is that I think the main characters move between each of those. So we've got the travellers, as it were, Rosalind, Celia, Orlando, Adam, Touchstone, who and later Oliver, who move between those worlds. But actually all of the other characters are very firmly located in one of those three worlds. And so we spent a lot of time on the first day of the residency thinking about what each of those three worlds represents. And then we explored them over the next few days. So the second day we explored the world of the court, and we thought about the way in which it's all about constraint, a kind of authoritarian approach to power. People feel insecure, people feel suspicious.
But at least they have wrestling to watch.
Although even the wrestling, of course, is a symptom of what's wrong with that society. It's about pitting people against one another in order to distract from the real problems. It's about the Duke, the bad Duke, imposing his whims. Trump came up, of course, a heck of a lot in this week, and is sort of a lurking behind Ed Farrow's characterisation of the Duke, not in any obvious way, but just as a kind of whimsical leader with authoritarian tendencies, who's sort of pugnacious, unpredictable, and. You know, let's face it, kind of insecure.
So wrestling is his Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the following day, we went out into the woods to explore the exiled court. And that was a really lovely day because it was a sunny day. We took our guitars out, so we played through some of the songs.
Man, this just sounds like 2004. I wasn't there for the residency in Warwick, and I'm really, really quite envious about it. But yeah, it sounds like 2004 when we went out into to the woods with guitars and rehearsed.
We did most of our rehearsals outdoors in 2004. Mm. We tend to rehearse indoors now, but actually occasionally rehearsing outdoors is really, really valuable because it does get you used to not only physical things like uneven terrain and needing to use your voice differently, but I think more importantly, the kinds of distractions you have in the open air, wildlife and weather and all that stuff really does influence how you play moments.
Yeah, and for me, there's a very strange thing that's harder to quantify or qualify. Things feel different outside. Mm. When you put them outside, than how they felt in a rehearsal room. Moments can feel really, really good and feel like they're working really well when you're in a room. And then you take them outside and they just feel lost somehow. It might just be the expanse of space around them. I think it's something almost intangible about it. But you do have to work stuff slightly differently when you're outdoors. And it's not just to do with sound or distractions and things. It's a thing. I think it might be an attention thing. It might be an energy thing. I think maybe when you're outdoors, you have to You feel you have to fill the space with more energy.
Yeah. Pace becomes more important in the open air. You can't let a moment hang in the same way that you can indoors. And obviously,
well, sometimes you can, because sometimes you get these wonderful, like, you just get a breeze that comes through at the right moment, and it's just like rustling trees around you, and you feel like, but I think you have to play those moments based on what is happening.
Absolutely.
So if you get that gust of wind, I can pause now, because everyone in the audience can feel this this breeze that's suddenly come in. It feels like a change of mood.
Yeah.
And you can play with that.
And sparingly.
Because, yeah,
of course, you know, the charged pauses do work in the open air, but you kind of have to earn them more.
Yeah,
I think
I'd never start an open air play in the way that you can start. You can start a show in a theatre with a member of the cast comes on stage and is silent for a while. It does some silent clowning or something. See, anything silent, you can get away. It's a nice way to open a play before any dialogue starts. You can get away with it. If you do that in the open air, the audience don't feel that the show started yet. You have to come out, and it's why we had the hey ho, hey nonny no. Openings that we've done to shows is to, you have to start with something big and loud, say, hey, the show is starting, you know, otherwise it's very hard. You can't do a lighting change that suddenly brings people into the space.
And of course, thematically, it was really important for us to rehearse that particular world outdoors, because it's all about being in the open air itself. So it enabled us to, you know, I mean, a big part of doing open air theatre in general is that it creates a kind of festival atmosphere. People are eating and drinking, people are drunker than they would be in a theatre, people are more relaxed physically than they would be in seats in rows in the dark. They're likely to be lounging around. So that kind of environment creates perhaps something a bit like the Duke's Exiled Court automatically, and certainly we've built on that in our production.
It's why the play works so well as an open air show, is because it has that setting for much of it.
And the Duke has a deck chair in our production, he has a picnic hamper in our production. We've the music and the general feel of the Duke's Exiled Court is based on kind of, you know, open air festivals and folk festivals and that kind of thing.
The exile Duke is occupying the same world as the audience are, pretty much,
basically. And then day four, we looked at the subplots. We looked at Silvius and Phoebe, and we looked at Touchstone and Audrey, and that's where a lot of that new material was workshopped. And then finally, we looked at the ending, because the ending presents all kinds of problems. Things come out of nowhere. So we thought about how we build up to some of those reversals, some of those moments when characters suddenly become good, the moment when Phoebe suddenly decides that, okay, she'll marry Silvius. How do we deal with that? Why does she decide to marry Silvius? Is that a happy ending? Oliver and Celia's relationship and all that stuff. So it was enormously valuable that week. And I think really I learned a heck of a lot from it. I hope the students did. I know the actors did. And it really shaped then what we went on to do in the subsequent rehearsal period with just the actors.
Yeah, except I'm so jealous again, because I think there's something amazing about watching a company, not to blow our own trumpet, but watching a company like the Pantaloons rehearse and seeing all these discoveries getting made. It's amazing. It's something you get a bit when you come and see a Pantaloon show. So much of that happens in the rehearsal space every day. Amazing things are happening, and people are playing around, and some of the stuff doesn't get used. Some of the stuff that we come up with is really funny. And we just have to drop it because it might undermine something that happens. It might undermine, the characters in the play, or undermine something that happens later in the play, or doesn't.
Or just takes up too much time.
So we end up coming up with loads of funny stuff that we can't actually use, because you have to think about the play as a whole. Mm. But if you see the Pantaloons rehearse, you actually get to see a lot of that. Mm. And
we've developed a show recently that is aimed at allowing an audience into precisely that. We developed a show called Play On, where we workshop a number of short Shakespeare scenes and then ask the audience for suggestions about how to play them. And of course, you know, typically audiences come up with completely mad things that we would never have thought of and that are borderline impossible to play. But then when actors try to play them, you know, what did we have recently? Juliet on a skydive, and the Taming of the Shrew, was it, on trampolines? Two Gentlemen of Rome on trampolines. I did learn a lot from doing Play On about improvisation and about how audiences interact with improvisation, because we, as listeners who've seen any of our shows will know, we build improvisation into almost all our productions, probably all of them. And sometimes that's in a formal way, in that we have a little bit where someone asks the audience for suggestions about something. So in As You Like It, for example, Alex Rivers asks, as Rosalind asks the audience how to play a man, and then whatever they suggest, we see feeding into the next scene when she's playing Ganymede meeting Orlando. And we have particular moments when Touchstone interacts with the audience, asking them about their jobs, and incorporates that into a kind of version of the Shakespearean text. But then we also encourage our actors, and in fact, we it's one of the things we look for when we're auditioning actors, is actors who are really present, really in the here and now, and will respond to the dog that walks across the stage, or the sudden gust of wind, or whatever it might be. Maybe with an ad lib, maybe just with, sometimes all it takes is a look or a gesture or something. And we're looking for those actors who are really in tune with their environment and what's going on in the audience around them. And so we encourage our actors, we actively come up with exercises and instructions that give them the space to ad lib, to improvise, to incorporate the here and now.
Well, I think that's enough for today. We've rambled on long enough. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Pantaloons' first ever podcast. We hope you've enjoyed what you've heard today. If you have any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. That goes as far as coming up with a name for our podcast. At the moment, I'm calling it the Pantaloons Podcast. But if you can think of something better, then please do let us know. It's goodbye from me, Mark Hayward.
And it's goodbye from him.
It's no, that's someone else's. we've got to come up with a goodbye.
Okay.
What can we do? Goodbye.
Goodbye.